live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by former Republican congressional staffer Doug O'Brien, Tea Party activist Steve Bolage, and journalist Charles Madigan. Our program tonight, comedy from our home base, the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, for the next 2 hours, we will be talking about the lead story in this country as a result of a rampage shooting yesterday, which saw a member of Congress shot in critical condition as we speak, a federal judge killed, five other people killed, and 14 people wounded in this rampage in the shopping center in Tucson, Arizona. The instant analysis by the national news media and by bloggers has already begun. This is an opportunity. This is the first live national radio opportunity for you to share your thoughts and opinions. And we would be very interested in hearing it tonight. 1-800-723-8289. The sheriff of Pima County in Tucson, Arizona, where this took place, he issued a statement, and this is what he had to say. It's not unusual for all public officials to get threats constantly, myself included. That's the sad thing about what's going on in America. Pretty soon, we're not going to be able to find reasonable, decent people willing to subject themselves to serve in public office. That is Clarence Dupnik, the sheriff. Now, the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, who was sworn in earlier this week and who swore Gabrielle Giffords in herself on Wednesday of this week. This is a woman that is sworn in to be part of the 435 men and women that govern this country in the House of Representatives. Speaker Boehner yesterday issued this statement. He said, "An attack on one who serves is an attack on all who serve. Acts and threats of violence against public officials have no place in our society." Doug O'Brien, you join us tonight. You are a Republican. Once upon a time, you spent a good portion of your life as a congressional staffer working for Congressman Mark Kirk. And one of those victims yesterday was the staffer for Congresswoman Giffords, and a couple of the people that are wounded are also staffers. From a staffer's perspective, and looking at the way life has changed since 2001, are you surprised that things like this don't happen more often?
Well, I think that, you know, the first thing that jumped to my mind when I heard this news is that every office, every congressional office, and even state legislators, mayors, aldermen, they deal with constituents all the time who have grievances that may or may not be rooted in reality, shall we say. And it is completely apolitical. It is part of a free society where people have access to their elected officials. I hope that people around the country, when they're talking about this, remember the name of Gabe Zimmerman, who is the Constituent Services Director for Congresswoman Giffords, who lost his life yesterday. And the first thing I thought of was, and my wife and I sat talking about this yesterday, about how many town hall meetings we've attended, how many times we've been there. I was at a town hall meeting a month and a half ago. And I spoke with a member of Congress today, and it's definitely shaken all of them, and particularly their families. And I think people need to keep a perspective on this, taking a step back from those who want to stir up either side of the political spectrum, and remember the human side of this.
Charlie Madigan also joins us. He is now a writer in residence at Roosevelt University in Chicago, but for many years he was a reporter and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. You have covered numerous stories like this over the years where there's been this outcry, this quick jump to sort of blame one political side or the other. Your reaction to the way your colleagues in the media have responded to this story already?
I think one of the things I'd like to point out is that this does happen frequently. It's not a rare thing. What makes this different is the people who are the targets. But a week doesn't pass where you don't hear a story about somebody in a shopping center someplace or in a parking lot or unloading and taking some people down for reasons we never really hear about. I think the problem here, from what I've seen just today, the problem here is that everybody's trying to rationalize an irrational situation by saying, well, it's people who have been incited by Sarah Palin's website. It's people who have been this or that. It's people on the left and the right who are saying harsh and critical things. And I want to step in here right now and say that that's protected speech in America. You can't go and try to blame people who are exercising their First Amendment rights for what someone who's clearly irrational does. I don't know that speech had any aspect.
Well, that would, but again, if you listen to the Sunday morning show, some of the members of Congress today were basically saying, "Hey, we've got to lower the rhetoric." And Representative Cleaver, the head of the Black Caucus, and Debbie Wasserman from Florida, all saying, "Hey, we got to lower the voices because they fear." And I want to get Steve involved in the discussion. Steve,
They're trying here to get ahead of something so that they can build some sympathy for their own situation, the members of Congress, the people who are talking like that. The fact of it is, if rhetoric like this were an incentive for people to commit these kind of crimes, they'd be happening to members of Congress and public officials all over the country because the rhetoric has been hot for a long time.
And they would have been happening for 230 years.
A long time.
Because the rhetoric,
right.
The rhetoric today is really,
it
ebbs and flows, but the rhetoric comes and goes over the history of this country.
But again, Steve, again, you're a Tea Party activist,
right,
in Chicago, and again, in some of these stories, it's already, people have already made the leap from, the Tea Party movement
they don't like the Tea Party because they don't like what we stand for. They can't control us, so they don't like us. So they attack us whenever something like this happens. But the reality of it is nobody has any control over a nut that goes out and does something like that. How is a society, we were talking earlier, how do we pick out who's going to do what? Who's going to judge when somebody needs to go to a psychiatric ward?
Well, again, the way in which people have responded, at least in this first wave, is they're for their own political purposes, they're quickly trying to blame the messenger who politically has caused them problems, is out there, and they basically say, because somebody revs up the crowd, whether it's literally or figuratively, because they rev up the crowd, there's a possibility that there's somebody in that crowd who's a little bit off. Now, I want everybody to think just about whether you believe in that concept as well. And if so, what, if anything, can we do about reducing the likelihood of this? Because I agree with you, Charlie. I'm surprised that more things like this do not happen to higher visibility people. And we'll be back to talk more. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway. We continue our discussion. We'll take calls in just a moment. Charlie, you wanted to make a point?
Oh, yeah. You mentioned the size of – in any crowd, there's a certain number. I think that in every crowd of more than a certain number, you can expect there's a percentage of people who are not really balanced right. And I don't care whether you're at a rock concert or a political event or whatever. It's just the nature of huge groups of people. And there's a degree of behavior within those groups, and they don't get incited to violence. This is an exceptional thing. What this guy did is exceptional. And to blame Sarah Palin for it or the Tea Party for it or anybody like that is looking in the wrong direction.
And the common denominator in virtually these outbursts that happen, sure, again, far too often, not necessarily with well-known people, but it does happen, is there is a mental illness. There's some mental disconnection of some kind. And I know your mother's a psychiatrist, and we're not, you know, we know that it's also, if someone believes that there is someone who is unhinged or about to go off, it is not easy to get that person off the street.
Right.
But there should be a track record. And again, what we know so far about this young man, he certainly seems to be antisocial. We don't know his psychiatric record. But in this particular case, as generally there have been in the past, there have been some signs that somebody should have realized this guy was a problem.
You don't have to sell him a Glock, you know?
I think it's kind of hard to come up with a game plan and saying, all right, you do this, this, and this, you're a danger to society, I'm going to turn you in. You know, if you're talking and you can tell in the context of what somebody's saying, if they mean harm to other people. Now, if I said something that I wanted to hurt somebody, would you turn around and call the police and say, this guy might do something? How many people would get arrested then? How many of us are going to have to go to a psychiatrist? You can't voice your opinion?
Solzhenitsyn and Sharansky were deemed mentally ill in the Soviet Union. I mean, that's an important thing to recall. But, you know, in this country, it is not a crime to have mental illness. And we have this is really where the valid debate lies.
They shouldn't have guns.
Right. Well, but at the same time, there are going to be a number of people who, for a lot of various reasons, have not been diagnosed, have not been getting treatment. They exhibit antisocial behavior, but that doesn't mean that we or any or that our government should be stepping in and deeming them mentally ill and placing them involuntarily into treatment.
Guns, my God, if we take the guns away, then how does a citizen have a protection from the government?
Wait a minute.
I'm not saying, because
again, the left would like to turn this into a discussion of gun control.
And that's wrong.
That is wrong. I agree with that. But again, what is right, I believe, is we do have to find ways to keep guns away from people who shouldn't have them.
He may have a right
to have them, but if he can't control himself,
and how do we get? How do we?
We
get,
the problem is how do you know?
How do we? How do we get? Yeah. How do we get treatment to people who potentially need it, in a situation where it's a paradox? Because a lot of people who are antisocial and have these behavior patterns will not voluntarily submit to the treatment that they may need.
Something to be. I have guns, and I have to tell you something. I don't view them as something that protects me from the U.S. government. That's not what my guns are for.
No.
And if I were going to try to protect myself from the U.S. government with my guns, I'd be in immense trouble right away because they have more guns.
I'd be more fearful of my computer when it comes to defending myself.
So the idea that we all need to arm ourselves because the government's going to come and take our stuff is wrong, just flat wrong. But
the
let's
idea
not get into that debate.
Isn't the idea of having guns? I mean, this isn't supposed to be about guns. But,
right.
You know, the idea behind having a gun is like I just read somewhere that the largest standing army in the world would be all the hunters in three states.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea is, well, now if our country God forbid, a dictator took over and wanted to get us, well, we can arm ourselves and fight.
But in this particular case, let us remember, again, this is, I think, Speaker Boehner is absolutely right. An attack against Giffords is an attack against everybody.
Sure.
Everyone should be outraged at this.
And this could have been
terrible.
A knife.
That's
it
right.
Could have been a baseball bat.
It could have been anything. It could have been acid. It could have been anthrax. It could have been anything like
butter
that.
Butter bomb.
A lie.
Sure.
But the issue here is what we have in this woman's, again, she had just been elected to a third term. She had just been sworn in again. She was in her third day of her third term. What does the representative do? A representative is supposed to represent the people. You represent the people by going out and talking with them face to face. She's not seeking re-election for another year and a half. She doesn't have to worry about election. Mm-hmm. 3 days in, she's out. She wants to meet the folks. I mean,
she's doing her work, you know.
What more perfect explanation of how our government should work then what happened here?
Well, while you're talking about that, the real danger here is that it will dampen that kind of enthusiasm on the part of elected representatives who, you know, I've never met a congressperson yet who didn't love going out and hanging out with people. They're very, very interested in talking with people.
They're gregarious. That's why they go to that business.
And when you have an incident like this happen, the instant response is, well, we need more security. We need to put a wall around them so they're all protected. I think we need to calm down and understand this was although there's a lot of violence in America, this is special. This is a different kind of thing. And it doesn't generalize. It doesn't mean that every member of Congress who goes out to meet with somebody at a parking lot is going to get shot.
And they should also know that when you decide to do that, you conceivably can run into people who like what you do. Most of the time, you're going to run into people who are complaining about something.
Right.
Absolutely.
And every once in a while, you're going to run into someone who's going to be over the top. And again, going over the top, and this obviously, in the case of this case, this was way over the top.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, you know, there were people, and I have seen it with my own eyes and ears. This goes back, you know, it certainly happened in the most recent debate over health care. But I saw it back in 1993 when Hillary Care was being discussed. I saw the hatred of people shouting in the face of members of Congress.
Sure.
Now, when you're 3 feet away from, and I think this is part of this discussion, which I think is a legitimate part of the discussion, is there anything we can do about bringing more civility back? Because you can disagree with someone, Steve, but you know, and you can be exercised about it, and you may raise your voice.
Right.
But there's no reason ever to scream in the face of someone who's a foot away from you.
Well, I think one of the things we saw in some of the town halls last year was I think there was a great deal of frustration that was born out of a sense of disconnection from between people and their government. And it's interesting because, you know, very few members are inaccessible. You know, some who are perhaps in leadership and people who are a little more insular, a little more in the bubble. But, you know, there's an old saying we have in terms of deciding how an issue plays in the grocery store or the post office test. And that is, when people come up to you at the post office or the grocery store, because members of Congress and the Senate go to the post office and go to the grocery store, it's, you know, how are people going to come up to you and say, you know, I liked your vote on this or I didn't like your vote on that? And that's just a tribute to how accessible they are. And I talked to some people who participated in the Republicans' conference call today with the members and their spouses and the chiefs of staff. And the general tenor of that was, common sense has to rule the day as we go forward in terms of our interaction with the public. Be prudent, but there is a general consensus that they did not want to leap towards more security and another layer between them and their constituents, and that in a sense almost akin to how we saw a reaction to 9/11, let's be more visible. Let's not let one unhinged individual win and put a barrier between us and our constituents.
I had a death threat on me, you know, and I'm a Homer Township clerk. It's not a big job. So, you know, people were mad because I'm running a tea party in Homer Township and they don't like the tea party. Some people don't like it. So I got a phone call. I went to the sheriff's department, gave it to him, but there was nothing they could do. Nothing happened.
Right.
But I got a threat. They're going to kill me and my family. You know, and that didn't stop me from going out anymore. I always figure you can't be afraid of going forward.
No.
And our elected representatives, most of them probably feel the same way.
I think they do. Are they worried? Yes. But in this particular case, this was an isolated incident in some respect. And again, first and foremost, this was an assassination attempt.
Yeah. Yeah,
it appears that this young man went there for the sole purpose of assassinating a Representative Giffords and other people that coincidentally happened to be there. He had the gun. He had the bullets. And so, you know, the federal judges lost. Yeah. The young girl, 9 years old, is lost as well. And by the way, for those people listening around the country and in Chicago and Philadelphia, I mean, it was the granddaughter of Dallas Green, who was a noted Major League Baseball player and a former executive with the Chicago Cubs and Philadelphia Phillies, and so the baseball world is mourning the loss of one of their own, you know, in the family, who is just out there. Many of those that were killed and wounded were also many senior citizens. And
there's a glaring media problem that's apparent because of this that people are not talking much about, and that is that.
You know what? You're gonna get into the glaring media problem just as we're going to a commercial, but that's a great tease because I'm sure
I'd like to reveal the glaring media problem.
I am sure that there's a lot of people listening and watching this program this evening because our program is a television show in Chicago that that will have their own suggestions as to what they might add to your list of media problems. 1-800-723-8289. We have a lot of people on the line. I promise we will go to them when we return from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We'll go to calls in just a moment after I introduce our guest. Our journalist tonight is Charlie Madigan. He is writer in residence at Roosevelt University, actually presidential writer in residence at Roosevelt University in Chicago, and a longtime reporter for the Chicago Tribune and a columnist there as well. Doug O'Brien is here. He is a former congressional staffer. He was on the staff for many years of Illinois Congressman Mark Kirk, worked out of the Capitol, and is also chairman of the Healthcare Council of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. And also joining us tonight is a member of an activist in the Tea Party here in the state of Illinois. He is Steve Bolage, and he is co-founder of the Homer Lockport Tea Party and the Will County Tea Party. These are areas west of the Chicagoland area, and he is also an elected township clerk in Homer Township.
Correct.
So you're an elected, came out of Republican politics, but you're a Tea Party guy.
I've been a Republican all my life, but I'm a Tea Party person first.
Okay. Well, it's good to have you with us on your maiden voyage here, and also it comes at a time because we booked you before the incidents of yesterday, but it's nice to have you with us since so much of some of the discussion nationally is about what role, if any, the Tea Party rhetoric has, to what extent are they responsible or potentially at blame because of this rhetoric and this lack of civility that's in the country.
Well,
A lot of liberals think you guys are stirring things up too much.
Well, we are stirring things up, and that's what our goal is to get everybody
aware. And you're successful at it.
We, you know what?
That really takes some more.
They can't control us. And we have Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, moms and dads. I mean, everybody's involved, and we all want one thing. We want the country to move in the right direction. No, so they don't like us because they can't control us. So now they're going to accuse us every time something goes wrong. They're going to demonize the Tea Party.
That's correct.
Or demonize Rush Limbaugh or Sarah Palin. And the reality of it is nobody from the Tea Party or Rush Limbaugh or Sarah Palin or anybody is advocating violence at all.
I'd like to demonize technology for a minute, which is my big glaring media point. Yeah, long ago when I started out in journalism, the rule was that you can kill somebody in a newspaper story, but only God can bring him back to life. So the congresswoman was dead 3 or 4 different times on TV the other day. Yeah. The problem now is the story has gotten way ahead of the actual story. People are speculating. There's wild speculation all over the place. We don't know why this guy did this. And I suspect we'll find out. We'll find out as much as we can find out about it. And then you can start saying, here's what happened. But once again, we're not letting reality get in the way of telling what we think we should tell about this. And there is no concrete stuff to deal with. So people are pointing fingers, you know?
Well, one of the problems is, let's face it, if you have a terrible incident like that, and for the entire day today, it was on Fox.
Yeah.
I mean, so they can only say so many things about it, and then they start inventing things. They, you know, they have a job, and their job is, you know, media.
But it's, at this moment in time, I don't think it's been overdone. I mean, first of all, it happened Saturday morning. A lot of news operations are slowed down on the weekends, so people react to it. I mean, you have a member of Congress who is fighting for her life. By the way, we should mention that according to the reports that came out of the hospital in Tucson today, she has responded. It is very rare when you get a bullet to the head that goes through the brain that you have any response at all, and the likelihood of successfully living is slim, basically very, very slim. So the news out of the hospital today was positive in that there was some response. She did have response to the doctors. So let us continue to have the representative and her family in our prayers this evening, because she is still with us, even though many in on the Meet the Press today were talking of her in past tense, which I think was unfortunate.
But even
and also we remember those who are wounded and those who lost their lives.
Even in that respect, Bruce, the media, and I feel like I'm a traitor because I'm media, but it takes years to recover from head wounds.
Right.
Not weeks, not days, not hours. To sit here today and pretend you can speculate at all about what kind of life she's going to live, whether she's going to run for re-election, that's just absolutely ridiculous. You know, neurologists will tell you, you're looking at a long, 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 long course, and it may only go to a certain point. You know, it may not go very far at all.
And some of the early figures, things that we know about the shooter in this particular case, and I won't say alleged shooter, I'll say the shooter in
shooter,
this particular
right, okay.
case, is, you know, there are some people, is it left of center? Is it right of center? Is it murky? Or is the common denominator here, he's deranged. He's off base.
Right. I think he's deranged. That's right. It.
Let's go to calls. We have lots of callers. Let's go to Aaron, listening to us in Sydney, Ohio, on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks, Bruce, for taking my call. And I just, first of all, wanted to say you're the first person I've heard, I haven't listened to a lot of coverage, that has described this as an attempted assassination. And I was just wondering if there's a waiting, as you seem to be kind of hinting at, before the media will call this an attempted assassination, or is there another reason why the media would do this? I mean, I always heard growing up the events like this in the 60s and on Ronald Reagan described as attempted or actual assassination.
Well, by the way, we should mention this afternoon the shooter, Mr. Lockman, was charged today, and the prosecutors, the federal prosecutors in Arizona, they did report that there had been an investigation, and they had gone through the person's home, and they had found written information suggesting that there was a plot involved in doing this. So I think it's safe to say, I mean, she is a public official, and the definition of an attack on a public official, at least with intent to kill, and obviously this certainly was, is an assassination, period. And the fact
I've seen a number of outlets that CNN report, they were calling it an assassination, and I've seen that both in print and in broadcast.
And the federal judge. I mean, the shooting of a federal judge is an assassination.
Right. Although
if it's intended.
He was not particularly a target. But what's
that
interesting
we know of.
True. What's interesting is that if you look at this, you know, assassination does not necessarily imply a rational, well thought out, extensive plot or conspiracy. And two leap to mind: President Garfield and Mayor Carter Harrison here in Chicago,
sure.
Both of whom, relative right around the same time, were both shot by people who were found to be mentally unstable, both ironically office seekers,
right.
back in the great Chicago tradition. But this is also early indication, somebody who is disconnected from reality and that led to actions that brought about a tremendous tragedy.
The man, by the way, who shot President McKinley,
right,
in Buffalo, New York, his goal was to assassinate all the leading world leaders, and he started with the President of the United States. That was his goal.
And didn't get any further.
The guy that was a little bit deranged to try to kill President Reagan.
Yes.
Or the guy who shot Teddy Roosevelt up in Milwaukee. There's just it's endless. I mean,
yeah, right.
You look at these.
The
things.
List is long.
Actually,
Jerry
it's an exception to the rule that somebody actually commits an assassination for a true political purpose.
Right.
So that could be Lee Harvey Oswald.
Don't start that today.
Jerry Cooks, Mayor Shermack. Yep. That is correct. Let us go to Jerry in Cooksville, Tennessee. You're listening on WNOX. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, no, actually, Bruce, I'm catching you on your station up there.
Oh, you are? Oh, very good. Okay.
Yeah, This time of year, I get you guys.
Good.
Well, I'd like to touch on a couple things. First, when a lot of people are trying to blame this on Tea Party people and everything, this is coming from people in the party who said you can't let a good crisis go to waste. And back when George W. Bush was president, I mean, they had articles and even made a movie about assassinating him. And people said that was art, and it was art. It really didn't mean anything.
Right.
And so anyway, this young man, it seems that, I guess he liked reading Adolf Hitler, Mein Kampf, and some books by Karl Marx. Now, from what I know about the Tea Party, I don't think that they would have anything to do with Karl Marx or Adolf Hitler. They believe in individual liberty and small government. So when I hear people get up and say they want to blame Sarah Palin or talk radio or Fox News, I just find it absolutely outrageous. And plus the fact he said that that he had rantings like anarchist. Now, I remember a famous anarchist here in this country was Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, who were deported from this company or this country. They wanted to kill the head of Carnegie Steel back in the, I guess it was back in the late 19-teens. And today the people on the left just praise Emma Goldman. So I don't know where you're going to take it from.
Doug O'Brien, your response.
Well, we've seen, and this was a point we talked about a little bit earlier, those who leap up and say, oh, the rhetoric, I mean, our history is literally founded on incendiary rhetoric, on people who said things that were deemed treasonous, and the famous line, we'll either all hang together or hang separately, was literally true for the founding fathers. They stood at peril of loss of their lives to take a political stand. But during the course of our history, we've seen an ebb and flow of what could be called incendiary rhetoric. And when you're on the receiving end of it, it can be horrifying.
Right.
And in those congressional offices, you see it pretty frequently.
And certainly the one thing we know is that it has occurred on the left. It has occurred on the right. And again, what makes it even maybe a little more potentially dangerous now is you now have television that's spreading these words. So more and more people are seeing this, and much of what television and talk radio has become is a mixing up of the sides.
But it's still just talk.
Back shortly from Chicago. It is talk. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Oak Park, Illinois. Thanks for calling us, Louise, on 1-800-723-8289. What's your opinion on what transpired yesterday in Tucson, Arizona?
Yeah, well, what stood out to me was I just saw it on the news again tonight when the glass door to her office was shattered. Was it a gunshot? I don't know, but that would have alerted anybody. I don't think I'll make a public appearance at this time, you know? I mean, it would mostly scare most people that she should go out amongst the crowds there. You know what I mean? There should be an alert there somewhere. Someone doesn't like me. I don't think I'll go out and make this
appearance. All right, go ahead. I think everybody wants to respond to that, starting with our former congressional staffer, Doug O'Brien.
If you reacted that way to a rock through your window or to a threatening letter, phone call, or confrontation, then all 535 members of Congress would be at home under their bed cowering in fear. And fortunately,
instead of just half of them.
Well, but fortunately, that doesn't happen. And the interesting thing is, Gabrielle Giffords was one of those people who really put that public service first. And it is a tradition in this country. Public service is putting yourself on the line. It is physically, emotionally, putting yourself on the line to serve the public. We should come out of this also thinking about the sacrifices that people in public service, both sides of the aisle, sure, all parts of the spectrum, the sacrifices they and their families make to serve. And it is a noble calling. And let's also, I have to say this, let's not forget the staffers who, without any of the glory,
right,
are also sadly in harm's way.
Right. Steve Bollage, Tea Party. Go ahead. Your response to the same call.
Well, you know, I just listen to all this stuff, and I have to keep going back to the same premise that it doesn't matter if you're a Republican, a Democrat, or a Tea Party person. If a person is insane and they're going to do something, they're going to do it. And unless we can find out ahead of time, which would be a big problem to find out ahead of time, their job is to go out and represent people. And if you don't go out and talk to the people in person, you're not doing your job. And everybody in Congress, for the most part, I would believe that they're out there and they want to do a good job. They wouldn't go through the effort of campaigning to get elected. It's grueling. And then get the job and not do the job well. So, you know, you have to look at it like if you're going to do it, you know the risk. You don't expect that to happen, but there are risks.
Charlie?
I was just mentioning that I was at Gettysburg last week, and that to me is where you saw political opposition and its extreme. And I went and walked up the hill that Pickett's guys went up when the Confederacy basically effectively ended. And when you talk to me about rhetoric, it's just words. There's a difference between words and actions, and you will never, ever see the threat to this country or to its politicians that we've already survived many, many, many years ago. This is a terrible thing that's happened, but it's an isolated thing that's happened. And don't think that every time President Obama walks out of the White House, he doesn't have in the back of his mind what happened to John Kennedy, what happened to presidents before him. It's a risky, risky business, but at the same time, our country is not falling apart. You know, we're not overwhelmed and not overrun by loony people with rifles and pistols. There are plenty of rifles and pistols that aren't used for violence at all. So let's keep some kind of context on this.
But there are members of Congress already talking about whether or not there should be beefed up security. And you mentioned that you were in on a call today with Republican House members.
Well, I talked to a member after that call, and he indicated to me that the consensus among the members was that they could not allow a single individual to win and to be able to put a wall between them and their constituents. As Charlie said, you know, we've got a lot more to learn here, but early indications are that we're talking about somebody who was unhinged, who was not in his right mind. And that is an isolated incident, and it can't be something that people allow to separate us from a representative government.
And we're also talking in this particular case about, as I mentioned, a representative who had just been reelected, and 3 days in, she's out talking to the voters again. But this was a moderate Democrat in a swing district, in a district that could go either way. She just got through a tight race. The Tea Party was on the other side in that particular race because they disagreed with some of her positions, which that's what campaigns are all about. But this was not necessarily some left-wing crazy out there who had even a national track record or national recognition. Most people in the country, she was not one of the more famous members of Congress that sometimes people might gravitate to because they see them on television all the time.
This is a woman who really is, she's a citizen legislator, and it's all the more tragic because this is not somebody who, like you said, was a household name or somebody who was at the cutting edge of some controversial issue. This was really somebody who had worked her way up in politics. She was living, she has lived the American dream, and it's just what makes it so much more tragic.
Did you, what was your reaction to the sheriff's comments suggesting, almost talking about, you know, that, you know, making it would be difficult for good people to want to run for office because of the climate in the country? Do you think that was appropriate at a moment that he uttered those words?
We found many great, great Americans who ran for Congress and the Senate in 1860, 1862, during the 60s. And I don't think that this is going to change. There are plenty of people in this country who care so deeply.
You got to realize
to me, this was an example of a sheriff who chose to seize a moment to grandstand, and obviously he is someone that perhaps does not like the fact that there's another sheriff in Arizona who gets all the national press, and I think he's I think he's using this incident to try to propel himself.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What about the possibility? Law enforcement people are human beings too. What
Hang
about the possibility
second.
He's overwhelmed?
Well, that's probably true, as he would be at this moment. We got to pause right now. We're going to be back for another full hour of this discussion. If you're listening to us on radio, we're going to be joined in the next hour by Jan Schakowsky, a Democratic member of Congress from Illinois. And if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, former Republican congressional staffer Doug O'Brien, Illinois Tea Party activist Steve Bollage, and journalist Charles Madigan. Our program coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8029. We have been talking about the shooting rampage in Tucson, Arizona, throughout our entire broadcast this evening. It will be our singular focus of discussion because of the significance of it and the large loss of life, as well as a member of Congress who had been the targeted target of this assassination attempt. Joining us now is a member of Congress from Illinois. She is Jan Schakowsky, longtime member of Congress and also a longtime friend of this program. And Jan, I thank you very much for joining us on a
thank
night
you.
When I would assume that many of your colleagues around the country are having special concerns and special conversations with members of your own family.
Well, certainly everybody is examining what exactly this means and how we behave and how we go forward, and at the same time just shocked and so distraught, really, over what has happened to Gabby, who's a friend of so many on both sides of the aisle.
What is the lesson, if there's a lesson to be learned thus far? Realize it's just a little over 24 hours ago, but is there any lesson that has been learned thus far?
Well, I do think there are a couple conversations that we ought to have in Congress. One is about what I think is the overheated rhetoric that we've seen, some of the symbolism that's been used in campaigns. Gabby Gifford herself talked about, I saw a clip talking about how her district was designated with a target, and the crosshairs right over her district to a gun site.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just the words that we use, the way that political differences have taken on such incredible passion, and I think some dangerous. Language.
Would you acknowledge, though, Jan, that, I mean, historically over the last 20 years, that graphic I'm not a rifle guy, so I'm using the wrong terms here. But would you acknowledge that those have been used by those on the political left as well as the political right?
Because I didn't say left or right.
I
said that we should have a conversation about the way we talk political campaigns and in issue campaigns, and the way we express our differences.
And
the second, I think we need a conversation about guns, and just the easy access to guns and the prevalence of guns. You know, if he had come with a knife or a brick or whatever, certainly would have been a different outcome.
Doug O'Brien is here, former staff member of Mark Kirk's campaign, who's been talking about the staffer who died and also the staffers who are wounded, and has generally been talking about sort of the aura of what it means to sort of work in the Capitol. I know he's got a comment or two.
Well, you know, I think that, as we've talked about a little bit, that you know, there has been this great rush to decry the level of rhetoric, and you know, certainly a great deal of it has been very pointedly targeted towards conservatives. And, you know, if we take a minute and step back, we can see that there has always been passionate rhetoric. There have always been words that have been used in political rhetoric that anyone who wants to make a case out of it could certainly do. We were talking in the break. Bill Clinton had a war room running his campaign. And back in the 60s, many activists were crying, "Burn, baby, burn." And, you know, so we have this history of heated rhetoric, but that's what politics is about. And Madison in...
Yeah, but you may remember...
Can I finish?
I thought we were in a conversation. I'm not challenging you. I just wanted...
Well, I was in the middle of a sentence, but...
Okay, go ahead.
You know, Madison in Federalist 10 said that, you know, that liberty is the oxygen of the fire of factionalism. And that really holds true. We have this liberty, and this liberty creates rhetoric that can often be heated.
I want to go back to a conversation we had in the first hour, Jan, and that is because there are those like yourself. You were one of the most outspoken, anti-gun people in Congress. Your whole career has been spent frequently on this issue. It's a major issue of concern of yours. But in a case like this, isn't the real issue not so much the gun, but the availability of that gun by someone who shouldn't have had it, because there should have been some entity somewhere that knew a little bit about his inability to handle this right and responsibility that the Constitution gives him?
Well, there's no question about that. I was just listening to a slice of an interview with a professor, a math teacher at I don't know if it was a junior college or the college that he was going to. This teacher was afraid of him. He acted out from the very first moment and said things that were alarming in terms of the kinds of things that he might do. He did tell the administration about that, and so you're right that, you know, that certainly we need, and we saw that with which campus was it, Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. Someone who should never have had a gun, and if the
right.
laws were enforced, he would not have had a gun. But I just want to say, and what I was trying to say was actually to reinforce what Mr. O'Brien was saying, that when the rhetoric of burn, baby, burn, I mean, there was violence. People did do things in the 60s when that kind of language was being used. And, you know, and so when Gabby said, you know, there can be consequences to this kind of talk, you know, I don't think it's too much to say that we ought to dial it down. And, you know, we can argue whether or not it's historically common to do that, but I think dialing it down and
but Jan, if you dial it down as a we're going to have to break here in a moment. I'm going to ask the question.
Okay.
If you decide to dial it down, and as Debbie Wasserman Schultz suggested today, you know, maybe out of the respective party retreats that are coming up, maybe there's a collective retreat where both parties agree to sort of tone down the rhetoric, at least from the professional politicians, but. It is being argued within the national dialogue now is that it is forces beyond the professional politicians, whether they're talk show hosts, whether they're bloggers, where things really can get incendiary, that is a much bigger problem than the perceived lack of civility between the professionals. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Jan Schakowsky is joining us via phone, a longtime member, Democratic member of the House. And she is responding to the shooting rampage in Tucson, Arizona yesterday. Steve Bollage is here. He is a leader of the Tea Party movement in Illinois. And, Steve, you had a question or comment for the Congresswoman.
Yeah, Jan, you're probably a great person. I don't know you. But what you said, I disagree totally. You didn't say anything that I agreed with. And I just wanted to point out that in Chicago, how many murders are done by people that shouldn't have a gun, but they get guns? If you go to Washington, D.C., how many people get guns that shouldn't get guns? These are places where guns aren't even supposed to be allowed. So the laws aren't even working. And then as far as toning the rhetoric down, you know, part of the reason that the rhetoric is so high is because people are so frustrated. And this frustration is not violent. You know, we have tea parties, and there's never been one violent action, and we have between 2,000 and 10,000 people.
Let's let Jan, your reaction.
First of all, the Tea Party seems to be sensitive to this and defensive about all this. What the sheriff was saying, I'm reacting now, Bruce, to what you said, that that even if politicians themselves were to tone down, is that really going to make a difference?
Right.
And what the sheriff in Tucson had said was that most normal people can handle this kind of rhetoric and respond appropriately, but it can also fall on the ears of unstable people, as this individual was, and there ought to be some recognition of that when you have symbols that and language that relates to violence, and you know, this is not about the First Amendment or freedom of speech. And yes, people are frustrated, but I have to tell you, it does feel to me like a line was crossed. That somehow people feel permission to talk to each other in ways that are different from what I've experienced in my years in politics, not just in elective office, but in the political arena.
Charlie Madigan also joins us. He is a colleague, journalist, and also a constituent, and also a neighbor of yours.
I know you, and you are a great person. I thought I'd make that clear. But I need to know how you're going to dial down. What, are you going to have a department of dialing down the rhetoric or what? Because it's like so much of it comes from so many different directions. And I don't know, if it were the cause of incendiary action, there'd be a lot more of it because it's so heated. Do you think that maybe we're in a situation where we don't know enough about this guy or what motivated him to really start thinking about how we should respond? Because, you know, you don't want to go wasting a lot of congressional effort or a lot of legislative effort on, for example, stronger gun laws that won't really apply to the situation we're dealing with. Do you know what I mean?
Well, except that the truth of the matter is, and, you know, I'm sure others who are contributing to this conversation will disagree, that it's at the point right now in the Congress that whatever the NRA is going to score on becomes the law, almost without any scrutiny, to the point that we passed in the House something that said that if you, in bankruptcy, you know, you may have to give up a lot of things, but you don't have to give up, I can't remember how many weapons, that those would be protected in bankruptcy proceedings. I mean, things that, to me, don't even make sense, or that we can't keep certain records for a certain length of time that would help us to apply the law, et cetera.
Jan, if we let you sit down today and write legislation and gave you the power so that your imprimatur would make it law, what would you do? How could you fix it?
I think I would start with automatic weapons. The president of Mexico, when he came here, a moderate, said to the joint session of Congress that since the ban on automatic weapons went into effect, that weapons have been pouring across the border and has been making the border region of both the United States and Mexico much more dangerous. So I think I would start there.
Let me go back to something that we've talked about in the first hour, and that's because, again, whenever there is a shooting rampage of any kind, whether it's at a school or in the shopping center, as Charlie said, this happens far too frequently in the United States. It doesn't get this type of level because there was a celebrity, there was a political assassination element to it, which elevates it, and it happened on a weekend, and obviously it is a huge story, as well as it should be, because of the loss of life and all those are wounded. But the reality and the common denominator in all of these cases, it is about the wrong kind of person. Someone that should not have had a gun got a gun. And it always comes back to mental health. It seems to me, and I don't know why it takes, I don't know why our treatment and dealing with mental health in this country is not taken more seriously. It is at the core of most of our social problems, no matter what it is. Whether it's outrages like this, someone feeling that that life has not treated them well, it leads to anger. It leads to it's well beyond anti-government activity. It's anti-social activity.
Suicides.
It's suicides.
Homelessness.
Homelessness. Every single issue. Alcoholism. Pornography. Child abuse. I mean. You name it, it goes back to a mental issue that was unresolved and was shoved under the rug. You're going to look, when we find out about more about this young man, you're going to find out there were several signals that his parents, that his relatives knew about, and they either did nothing about it or they tried and they did not get help. Because that's what happens. But nobody gets down to that. We as a country, we should be outraged at the way we deal with mental health in this country.
Sure.
That's at the core.
There's
the way to end these conversations in the next 20 years is to deal with that issue and not be diluted with some of these other issues that are just going to get bogged down into people who want to take guns away from people and the Second Amendment people to say, by God, you're not going to do it.
Bruce, we can't even deal with physical health in this country. Come on, we're going through that battle again after it's been resolved.
I'm saying that mental health is every bit as important as
sure,
physical health.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You got a bad toe, you got tuberculosis, you got cancer, you're not generally going to go in and blow away 20 people at a shopping center. But if you're mentally ill or you've not been given the mental treatment that you need, you're going to do this and you're going to do it. And you know what? It's going to happen 10 more times this year in this country. And everybody's going to, when it all happens, everybody's going to talk about guns, the rhetoric, who said this to that. It doesn't get to the problem.
That's where we should be addressing that and not addressing the Tea Party being bad or guns being bad.
Jan, your reaction to what I just said.
Well, I'm going to add to my list of the things that I definitely think we should talk about. I think you're absolutely right. But, as I said before, it isn't as if this guy's problems were not identified. So the question then is, what happens when they are identified, when a professor says, there is a really unbalanced student. I'm afraid of him. The rest of the students in the class are afraid of him. He's writing things on test papers that are very bizarre. And, that there ought to be some sort of consequence. But, Bruce, part of the problem we have in our country, and we're seeing it a lot now, and hopefully this is going to be reduced with our own returning soldiers, that there has been this long-standing stigma of even acknowledging mental health issues, and there certainly hasn't been appropriate resources designated to dealing with them. We have treated the mental health issues differently. We're trying to get mental health parity to become a reality so that we care for those who are mentally ill with the same resources as those who are physically ill. In many ways, it is a physical illness, a brain disease. But you're right. So that definitely is something that we ought to look at. And then when someone is identified as having a mental illness, making sure that we do something about it.
We also need a greater conversation. This is part of the bigger, broader conversation that everybody needs to have. And that is the stigma of mental health has got to be discussed because there are obviously variations of it. You've got to be able to deal with these things because, as you say, if you can get help and people are getting help, you know, they're at least trying to get, you know, trying to help themselves. But again, in most cases, you're going to find out that nobody tried. I mean, one of the most memorable interviews that I can ever remember when I was producing the Chicago Tonight Show with John Galloway was it was a two-part show with the parents of John Hinckley, who tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan. And it was the agony of that family who knew they had a son who was off balance. They were trying to get help for the guy, but they knew that his life, they knew this at age 13, that this guy's life was going spiraling downhill. And the frustration that parents must have when they're in a situation as the parents of Mr. Lochner might have. I mean, we're going to be reading about their stories, and it's tragic. Jan, we are out of time on this portion of the show. I know you've got other engagements for this evening, so I thank you very much. I know it will be a discussion that will not go away, and we look forward to having you as a guest on
Beyond
the
Beltway. Thanks so much, Bruce. Hi, Jan. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Back shortly from Chicago, everybody. Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Doug O'Brien is here. He is a former chief of staff for former Illinois Congressman Mark Kirk. He's sort of talking about his career and his reflections being a member of congressional staff at a time when congressional staffers, just like members of Congress, are mourning the death of one of their own in the shooting rampage of yesterday. Steve Bollage is here. He's a Tea Party activist, co-founder of the Homer Lockport Tea Party and the Will County Tea Party Alliance. That's west of Chicago. He's also an elected official. He's a township clerk and has been since 2009. And Charlie Madigan is here. He is the presidential writer in residence at Roosevelt University, longtime reporter for the Chicago Tribune and author of the book Destiny Calling:
How the People Elected Barack Obama.
And you're getting to work on it again. Will the people reelect Barack Obama? Is that your next book?
I don't know if I'll do a book again. I put a lot of energy into that book, and I realized somewhere in the process people stopped reading.
Doug O'Brien, you wanted to make a point before we go back to calls.
Well, you know, I think in the discussions about the tragedy in Tucson yesterday, there are a lot of legitimate issues for us to discuss as a society. We can have a conversation about guns, what is and isn't appropriate with the access to weapons. And as you talked about, absolutely, as we saw with Columbine, we've seen with countless other incidents, we have to really talk as a society about what we're doing about mental illness. Those are legitimate things to talk about. One of the things Congresswoman Schakowsky said is that we have to talk about dialing down our rhetoric. And she said this isn't about the First Amendment. Yes, it absolutely is about the First Amendment. We can have discussions about these pertinent issues, but when somebody starts talking about how this indicates that we have to start controlling how people speak, what they say, when they can say it, it becomes fundamentally very, very troubling.
But here's what my frustration is being a member of the media is, and again, we are contributing to it by this discussion tonight. But we are reacting to what the public dialogue is at the moment. Is for political purposes, one side will take the other side. Okay, we got a side; they're going to blame the Tea Party movement. Okay, they're going to blame anything right of center because talk radio has been very effective for the Republicans and less so for the Democrats. So there's a political reason why they want to do it. And obviously, you have again with Jan and with others. Okay, guns are the problem. Well, guns are always the problem to some people. And then you have the court decisions that say, okay, you know, we're throwing out the gun laws in Illinois. And your point about, you know, some of the cities with the strictest gun laws, you know, are still violent. I mean, bad people are going to find guns and they're going to use them for the wrong purposes. You know, we have hundreds of people murdered in Chicago every year, thousands throughout the country. That's not the problem. How do you, and by the way, Our news media, especially our cable television entity, they want and they thrive and they operate almost exclusively on conflict. They want conflict. They want right. They want left. They want to take these same simple non-issues and play them over and over again. They never want to take the time to dig deep down into the issue of how do you identify someone early in life who may be on the wrong track, who's going to blow up and explode and kill people someday. And the bigger, broader issue is how does the parent of that individual, where do they get help when their health insurance doesn't even cover the right. visit to the psychiatrist or the psychologist?
But that's
and the people that get the help for that, Doug, are people either who are on Medicare. They may get some social work, or the people that have got a lot of money who can afford $200 to go in to see your psychiatrist. In the middle, you've got 95% of the people. They've got no place to go if they have a child who is acting up, who's an alcoholic, who's on drugs, whatever the problem is. They're not dealing with it. And because of that, the country is becoming unsafe.
Right. But that is a legitimate debate. And that's a discussion.
Yes. We should have it over and over again.
But what Ms. Schakowsky said and others have said is that we have to control what people are saying, because somebody out there who is disconnected, mentally ill or deranged, as a number of people have said, they may hear that rhetoric and act upon it. I think that is a very, very flimsy excuse.
We got lots of callers on the line. Orland Park, Illinois. Mike, you're listening to us on WLS. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, Bruce, great show. My real quick point is this. If we want a totally safe society, move to China or don't get up in the morning. As unfortunate as this tragedy is, and we could bring up all these issues, right. but the fact of the matter is, in a free society, you are going to have crime. And I what you're saying about the mental health issue, I agree with you wholeheartedly. But, one, how do you pay for it? Two, who is going to oversee this? Who is going to be in control? Not to go off on a way deep end, but the Soviets were fanatics about labeling anybody that they disagreed with as having a mental illness. And Ms. Schakowsky, she's very consistent. She attacked the Constitution in the first two amendments. She wants to curtail the First Amendment, as does our new Supreme Court justice, who's made comments on this on decisions in the past. And Ms. Schakowsky is definitely after the Second Amendment. There is no joke about that. And one other quick point.
By the way, let me just jump in. I agree with you that we do not want people to abuse or to bring people and throw people off the. Pull people off the street just because they look a little odd or they're acting strangely. We can't do that in this country. But what I'm talking about is, and I think there are things that reasonable people of all political persuasions could agree with, that there are certain signals that if they are intercepted at a young age and if there is medical intervention, but again, that intervention has to be paid for. You're right. It does have to be paid for. And it's got to be paid for just like all of the other things that one gets when one gets health insurance.
Also, don't go picking on Jan, because she represents the viewpoints of the people who sent her overwhelmingly back to Congress.
Right.
You are picking on Jan.
I know you don't like her, and I don't care that you don't like her. The people who voted for her think she's super. So
I'm not picking. I mean, that's fine. I support the Constitution, unlike she does, and I support her right to be
I
where
beg
she
your
is.
Pardon.
And
she one, has sworn to. She sworn that woman
one,
has sworn
one
to defend the Constitution,
the
sir.
Show.
Sir,
she should talk to Rahm Emanuel.
Did
about
you put your hand on the Bible?
The
did you put your hand on the Bible and swear to defend the Constitution?
Absolutely, I did.
When?
When I was served my country.
When?
When?
She's done it every couple of years since she went to Congress.
Yeah,
you know?
But they're different. There's difference of opinion.
I just want to have a fight. That's
okay.
All.
Well, we there's enough things to really fight about. Let's go to Mountain Home, Idaho, where Carl is listening to us on KBOI. And Carl, thanks for being patient. I know you've been waiting a long time.
Yeah, I agree with what you said about mental health. I've taught the subject relations for the Air Force for 13 years when I was on active duty. But the thing I wanted to make a point about that hasn't been touched on is the people who supposedly are obeying to lead the country, people who are leading the country, people in responsible, if you want to call it responsible, positions for the rest of the society. When they dial up the rhetoric, they basically say to the society, it is okay to do that, and it's not okay to do that. And they have a responsibility to the society themselves not to dial the rhetoric up like that, okay? And I understand that we've got people with mental health. But think about this. If I see you as a person of authority doing something and I've got a mental problem, I think it's right to do it. And that's the only point I have in terms of that, because I think that that is one part of the conversation that hasn't been discussed, okay? You've discussed, yes, this party or that party or whatever, dials up the rhetoric.
I'm going after the people
who are in responsible positions.
All right, okay? So you want them to speak responsibly, but then the question comes, who defines responsibility?
I got you. I don't have any problem with what you're saying there, okay? And I can't define responsibility. But I can tell you this, if you are singling out a person and or a group or whatever and implying that violence will change that group, and we are not at war with that group, I have a problem with that. And I wore a uniform for 28 years, and I swore to defend the Constitution of the United States, and will do it to this day, or even at my age. But the point remains that, no, I can't define that, but I think that those people who are supposed to be responsible know what's responsible and what's irresponsible.
Oh, you know what? You know, I don't agree with you at all. You know, you're talking about groups like the Tea Party, or you're talking about the Democrats or the Republicans.
I'm not mentioning any groups.
Well, you're not mentioning groups. You're saying people should take what they want to say and tone it down so you don't upset somebody. And
no, that's not what I said.
I'm not getting what you're saying then.
What I'm saying is responsible leaders. I'm not talking about the Tea Party. You can say anything you want to.
Right, responsible
I'm talking leaders. About or the Democrats or the Republicans.
Yep.
I'm saying if you are in a leadership position or you are vying for a leadership position, then you are in the public eye and you have a responsibility to the society not to advocate certain things that are harmful.
And the issue is I think most of the people who were in those responsible positions, they are in many cases, whether they be right or left, more often than not, they're acting in a responsible way because they are elected officials of the people. The people that are not elected by the people officially, but they are elected in the fact that they are the people that people listen to, whether they either read their blog or they watch them on cable television or listen to them on the radio, those people have a different responsibility. Their responsibility is to get ratings. Their responsibility is to get the people to listen to them, and in doing that, sometimes they might be less responsible than others. Back shortly from Chicago. From Northridge, California to Northbrook, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Let's go to Northbrook, Illinois, where Dan is listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, Bruce, before I make my point, what I'd like to say is I think you've done a really good job tonight at illuminating some of the other ancillary issues, specifically the part about mental health.
Thank you.
I think what I find...
And by the way, let me just add something to that. I hope my colleagues in talk radio don't get sucked in to the attempts by those who are, I want to say, more left of center, to get bogged down into another discussion of gun laws or rhetoric. I hope they don't do that. I hope they see that by changing the discussion and making it about the real problem here, they can do a service, but don't get sucked into it just because you want to have your traditional, old-fashioned left-right fight. Because you know what? Solving a mental health issue is not a left-right fight. It is a fight that involves everybody. It involves making our country a better place and a safer place to live. Don't create the line that exists. And I hope my colleagues in talk radio follow suit to what we're doing in there at night. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to say, but that line has already been drawn and crossed. Starting with MSNBC yesterday, whether it be Rachel Maddow or Keith Olbermann, with his video commentary that you can get right now on his website. I've heard it on CNN. I've heard it on radio.
But here's my point. Don't, as a conservative, don't get sucked into it. Same thing could be said for Fox. Don't let Fox and MSNBC suck you into the debate that they want for their ratings. You know what? Because it's going to go nowhere. They can have someone who's pro-gun, they can have the NRA people on, and they will all get excited and they'll go, it'll be the same argument over and over and over again. But as a listener, as a viewer, don't get sucked into it. Demand more. Demand a solution, not the same old crap we get every time one of these things happens.
Now here's my question for you. What's going to happen? And I realize normally you're the one that makes the question. But what's going to happen when once again you can bet the barn, and I'd like any one of your members to challenge me on this, within the next week or two, you're going to see another bill that's going to be put forth in the Congress that's going to deal with the regulation of talk radio, otherwise known as the Fairness Doctrine. That is going to happen again. You know it. Everybody else knows it. They're going to blame it all on the likes of Hannity and Limbaugh and all these people.
They will. But you know, as long as the Republicans are in control of Congress, that bill is going to go nowhere. But again, don't get sucked into that debate because it isn't the core thing. And you're right. We've got somebody, Representative Bob Brady of Pennsylvania. He does not like. He wants to ban the use of crosshairs in political advertising. You can't use a depiction or a graphic of crosshairs. Now, how idiotic is this guy?
Close the Target stores.
Yeah.
Close the Target stores.
Decon is going out of
and
business.
Don't call, yeah, that's right. Good point. Anyway, go ahead, did you finish your point? He's gone. Let's go to Chris in Heron, Illinois. Nice to hear from Heron, Illinois. WJPF in Southern Illinois. How are you?
I'm good.
Very good.
I just wanted to make the point that I work for the special ed district down here, and I work at an alternative school in middle school and high school, and half of the kids we get are mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
There's no place for them. They end up in special ed, and then they do something where it gets worse and worse, and they end up at the school where I work. And they have, you know, they go to, there's one doctor here that does the Medicare. They all are medicated. They do counseling with somebody who's barely a counselor, you know, once every week or two. And the point I want to make is a lot of these kids don't know they're mentally ill. They turn 18, and then they get all the rights of an 18-year-old adult, and their parents have no rights. There's HIPAA. Their parents can't help them.
Mm-hmm. What district are you in, ma'am?
I'm in Williamson County.
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you have any idea, any suggestion on how we can address some of the concerns that I brought up? You're obviously a foot soldier in this battle. Any idea?
Well, tomorrow I'm going to go to work, and I'm going to deal with, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 kids throughout the day. They don't know they're mentally ill. I mean, I can't say they're mentally ill. It's in their paperwork somewhere. But they're medicated. They say things off the wall. Some of them are violent. There's just no place for them to be. We had one girl, you know, in jail for a long time, and they were looking for a residential home for her. They couldn't find one, so now she's back in school.
Yeah, I need to say something. My wife has exactly the same job that you have, and I just applaud you for it.
Well, thank you. I actually enjoy it quite a bit. I like the older kids. You know, we have a lot of fun with them, but you know, you have to feel for them because you don't know which one is going to snap.
Maybe you might
you
be the, you might be the most important them. Influence. But you might be the most important influence in their lives, you know, because you care about them that way.
Yes, but then they graduate or they turn 18 or they drop out. We have a lot of dropouts, and you can't help them when, you know, they're running. Their parents can't help them either because of money or they have no control. You know, I see this every day, every day, every day. And it's really hard to watch.
Well, thanks for taking
I just want to make the point. They turn 18. They make their own decisions. There's HIPAA laws. You know, I can't do anything for my kids without getting going through a bunch of phone calls. And
Chris,
you know.
Chris, we are out of time. I thank you very much. I underscore Charlie's congratulations on the job that you do, and also to your wife as well, Charlie, because, again, to those people that that work in that field, you are doing God's work, and you're doing the work, I think, for those rest of us Americans who would like to live in a safe world, because the answer and the resolution is with people like you working in the issues that you deal with each and every day. They're not the BS we hear on a lot of talk shows all the time. We're out of time. Our thanks to Doug O'Brien and Charlie Madigan, and also Steve Bollage for being with us this evening. Dan Dorfman and Tom Veracruz helped make this program possible. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.